This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.
I'm John Batchelor. This is CBS Eye on the World. Sitting with Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, we leave West Africa and head to Johannesburg, South Africa, where in these last days, a meeting of the BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, led to the invitation of new states to the BRICS. The two in Africa that are of interest are Egypt and Ethiopia. However, at that same meeting, we're told in headlines, India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi and China's General Secretary of the Chinese Communist Party, Xi Jinping, met in some fashion and agreed to, according to the reporting, intensify efforts to de-escalate a border issue. What are they talking about? For several years now in the high Himalayas, there have been military forces deployed on both sides with a confrontation always possible between these two military forces about the border line that is, according to the Chinese, unclear, according to the Indians, very clear. But that was not all of it. India, when this started several years ago, turned against the Chinese presence in India entirely, banning apps and challenging all Chinese-based business in India. And therefore, Xi and Modi are not natural friends. They're not even natural frenemies. They're natural enemies. However, we now learn that President Xi will not attend G20 in Delhi. And my first assumption is, what did the comments about Johannesburg break down immediately? There is a suggestion without a headline yet, so this is just rumor mill. It doesn't mean anything, but there it is, that Xi is not attending the G20, sending his premier instead, because he wants to avoid Biden. Gregory, does that make sense, or is that just loose talk by geopolitical characters?
Well, I think it's loose talk in that respect, because I don't think Xi has anything to fear from Biden. And in fact, it gives him a good opportunity to basically show his dominance over President Biden. But one of the things about Xi Jinping is that he was getting into trouble even before he went to Johannesburg for the BRICS talks. He, as you know, was absent when it came to be his turn to address the BRICS summit. He subsequently had meetings with a number of South African and other officials, and then met with African defense leaders there. But during that same time, things started to really come out, which confirmed a lot of what you and I have discussed over recent weeks and months, is that the People's Liberation Army are starting to show that they're discontented with Xi Jinping's talk of attacking Taiwan. We see that a number of Communist Party officials are leaking reports about their dissatisfaction with Xi Jinping, and that's come out in the expatriate Chinese communist media. And that happened while Xi was in Johannesburg. The reality is that Xi had to get back to Beijing to really start to control things. And the dissent within China itself is becoming profound, particularly as a result of the cycle of one cyclone and natural disaster after another, compounding an already appalling economic situation, from which there is no recovery. So she can't afford to be out of the country. He also would not be happy in New Delhi, largely because it's a hostile environment. India is a hostile environment for the People's Republic of China at the moment, and already she has to face the reality that next year, Narendra Modi will chair the Shanghai Cooperation Organization summit, which is going to be in New Delhi. So right now, she has got too many things to worry about, can't afford to be in New Delhi. And the question is, how is he going to manage his very, very unstable domestic situation?
I go to the domestic situation. Reuters has an analysis of the Chinese economy. It doesn't seem to be any debate, at least in Europe and the United States, that the Chinese economy is in decline in some fashion. And the question is, what is to be done? There are three methods offered by the Reuters piece. One is to swallow the debt. The debt overload has now reached proportions having to do with real estate to the scale that there's no way forward and there's no way back. So swallow it, write it off, and suffer the setback to your economy for several years, maybe a decade. The second is a slower version of that. Accept slow growth or stagnant growth for decades in the Japanese fashion, which would, of course, weaken the strength of the relationship between the Chinese Communist Party and the people. And the third is something most radical, which is to stop being a finance-based, asset-based, credit-based economy in which you're inviting in foreign investment, and turn to your consumer class and let the consumers take the lead the way they do in the United States and Europe. All three choices have problems with them. But I believe from your analysis over these many weeks, you would choose none of them. Is that correct, Gregory?
More or less correct. The nearest we get to something which is going to happen is number three, turn to a domestic marketplace. But it won't be a domestic marketplace as we know it. It won't be a consumer economy, although she and his people have talked about it being a domestic consumer economy where local production meets local demand. The reality is that demand has diminished to almost nothing because the money supply into the individual pockets has diminished to almost nothing. What we are going back to is absolute extreme Maoism, which is something which we know that Xi Jinping has favored and has stressed and has admired. We are already starting to see hope being removed from all sections of Chinese society so that they cannot expect to have food on the table every day. They have to eat bitterness, as Xi said. They cannot move. They cannot buy foreign goods, and what little money they get, they're going to hoard just to be able to put food on the table when they need it. So this is going to be a very grim scenario, and it's one which you would assume would induce greater unrest. It was different when Mao was in power because there was no hope for a better future, and he was able to induce through things like the Great Leap Forward and the Cultural Revolution this mindless obedience which cost 60 to 100 million people's lives. Now we have a society which, thanks to Deng Xiaoping, started to get money in their pockets, started to be able to travel, get education, buy luxury goods. Now that's being taken away from them. So that is the hardest challenge which any leader has to face. Once you have introduced hope to a society, it is very difficult to keep up with the expectations of the society, let alone to manage that society when you take hope away. So the question is, at what point would, for example, the People's Liberation Army or the various police forces within the country stop punishing the population and side with them against the Communist Party? We see this as an increasing possibility, particularly as the civil servants are having their wages cut in most Chinese states. Not only are their salaries being cut, so too the numbers of employees within the civil servants. And this was the stable base, if you like, of support within the society, which the party could count on. Now it can't count on that anymore. So where is this going to go? And we've seen the signs that the PLA has already indicated to Xi Jinping that perhaps they won't even accept an order to attack Taiwan, which has been the cornerstone of Xi Jinping's policies over the past decade. So the question is, where does he go from there? Can he survive that? Can he manage to ride this wild horse until it becomes tired and stable or not? And I think this is going to be very problematic. And of course, Xi will try a number of radical moves. And one of them that he was going to try was the invasion of Taiwan. And I think the PLA has stopped that. But he's going to try one thing after another to distract the population and to show that he's still in charge and to show that what he is offering them in terms of new glory for China or whatever is worth the sacrifice that they're making.
One anecdote, since our conversation turns on the Chinese people. I'm told a visitor frequently to China and other parts of the world arrived in Shanghai to be shocked to see that a Shanghai business day resembled what he compared to a German city on a Sunday. Hardly any street traffic, foot traffic, hardly any cars in the street, and few diners in the Western-style restaurants that used to be status symbols. The city gone quiet. He was surprised by it, but it suggests that not only have the Chinese people pulled back, but foreign investment has pulled back. And what we're learning from Europe and America is that this is sudden. It just happened. Now, does that influence Xi's decision? Is he satisfied that the Westerners are no longer investing and arriving in Shanghai? We have a couple of minutes.
Well, it's not only Shanghai, it's everywhere in the country. Western investment has virtually ceased, and trade has virtually ceased. Is he happy with that? I think it's part of his expectation that he can bring the economy back under domestic control without any hopes at all. And this has been going on for some months, and the emptying of the major cities is profound. And a lot of it also has to do with the fact that nobody has money and nobody has enough food to put on the tables of these various restaurants.
So what we have here is a China that's not the rising power that we dealt with the last decade. Is that what we have to get used to? Is this a China that's going to go through a bad patch and then recover? Or is it a China that's going, you say, Maoism? That means it's going to close its borders, close the windows and seal out the world?
That's what's going to happen, and it has already started to happen. And this means that we'll see collapse and chaos within China continuing over at least a decade. And the only question is whether the Communist Party will be around much longer, or whether it will stay in control of a totally impoverished and immobile society, which unfortunately just happens to have massive stockpiles of nuclear weapons. Right. The reality is that its economy was never close to the United States economy. As much trouble as the United States has had, the reality is that the People's Republic of China economy is probably at its height was less than half what they said it was. So we have to think in those terms that this was never the growing power that it claimed to be. It was always a Potemkin economy and very much like a Ponzi scheme.
The aggression that China shows in the South China Sea, in the Himalayas, along its borders, everywhere, is that aggression likely to be redoubled if it suits Xi's policies? You say the PLA is hesitating, but the PLA can be bullied into or ordered into a predator mode, can it?
Well, that's the big question. Xi always thought that the PLA was his power base, whereas the PLA always thought that Xi was their guy to do what they wanted. They will commit to certain military actions if they think there's a reasonable chance of success. And that could include actions against India on the Tibetan Plateau. It could include operations on the Vietnam border, and also possibly making gestures against Russian-held territory. The Russia-China relationship is very, very fragile, and as always, from Soviet times and pre-Soviet times, and been really very troubled and antagonistic. That's going to increase it with some degree of certainty. The question is, how does Xi get out of his promises and rhetoric and bluster over Taiwan? We've discussed this, and I think that he will try to claim some changes in the Taiwanese elections coming up in January, that this was proof that that Taiwan has come back into line and he doesn't have to invade them or something like that. But clearly the PLA knows that it has a huge technological gap to face if it goes to war with Taiwan, and Taiwan brings in its strategic partners of Japan, United States, Australia, Philippines, South Korea.
Right. Gregory Copley, Defense and Foreign Affairs. Our favorite segment of the week next, the King Charles Report. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQ Bar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ Mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to iqbar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's iqbar.com, promo code KELLER20.